T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Oh, I don't know what the hell that was, but that happened a few weeks ago, and we are happy it did. Good evening, welcome in. Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score, 670thescore.com. It is Nick Szczepkowski, Anthony Herron with you up until 10 o'clock tonight. A ton to get to. Baseball teams, Anthony Rizzo struggling. Tons to get to with that, but big man, we're only a week away from training camp getting underway, one of the best times of year. You think about that each time you walk out and it's like humid as hell? You think of two-a-days back in high school? You think of two-a-days back at Iowa reporting to play for Kirk Ferentz?
The amount of football camps that I tend to coach this part of the year, that makes me think about it a lot too, and it's more fun. Well, maybe not more fun at all times, but it's definitely less exhausting to be on the opposing end of the yelling voice, like to be the yeller as opposed to the yell E. That helps quite a bit as far as just handling this part of the year when everybody's doing different football camps. And obviously the camps for the individual teams, as you reference, are set to open here in the next week or coming weeks, just depending on which level of football you may be playing. But for me, when I'm coaching a camp, I do feel, you know, that much closer to the game than I normally do. And so this part of the year, things do start to bubble up and in some cases even boil over, which is why my left knee it's usually jacked up. But the last time we were on, I think it was the last time we were on where I was just fresh off of one camp that I had coached. And I didn't realize that I'd given myself like a sustained injury. Like my knee doesn't feel any better today than it did a couple of weeks ago, the last time I was on with you. And it usually feels in pretty bad shape. But I think I may have to actually go have a doctor give an updated look at it. But this is football season. This is the time of year where you do these sorts of dumb things because you're willing to put your body on the line. Even though I've retired, I've still in some ways put my body on the line while I'm on the field. So it makes it exciting, I guess.
You got like a Jay Cutler thing going on in the NFC Championship game where it didn't look like he was hurt. Oh. You hide it too well. I never would have had any idea. You had the brace the one day you were in here,
yeah,
and I almost wanted to like kick you in the knee and see how fast I could get away,
and
see
if
I could get
away with it. Partly because the brace was because I got directly into the car. I didn't even make time to take the brace off between finishing the camp and then getting here, sitting in traffic and getting here to the studio as quickly as possible. Aside from that, it's just my normal gait has a bit of a wobble to it, and I've turned it from like kind of that blend between a limp and a pimp that I just kind of make it transition as smoothly as I can. So you used to see me walk that way, but before my lower body was just in completely horrific condition, I walked differently then than I do now.
That's Anthony Herron. I'm Nick Szczepkowski. This hour being brought to you by Vasectomy Clinics of Chicago. 312-644-6767, the telephone number to call this evening. Going to be talking a variety of different things. 8 o'clock tonight, Fran Charles from MLB Network will join us. Tons to get to with him, the Cubs. Some things going extremely well. Some things going not so well. We'll break that down. Have a legend in the city of Chicago sports-wise that gets maybe the most unceremonious send-off that we've seen of a Chicago sports legend, pretty much forgotten about at this point. We'll get into that as well. 312-644-6767 is your telephone number, but we are just a week away from Bears opening up training camp, and that's one of the things I always think of whenever we get to the humid weather, and I can't help but think of it now because it's go outside and grab a quick dinner a little bit tonight.
The air is wet.
It's wet. It's thick. It's like not quite like walking through a full-on cloud out there, but it's sticky when you step outside this evening. And I always think of like we had post 4th of July up until August, we'd always have our football camp start up. And it would be from 6 o'clock to 8 o'clock at night. And whenever I walk out in that situation or that temperature, that's exactly what I immediately think of. And I'm like, all right, well, this won't be bad. We'll have stations for the first 40 minutes or so. That'll be a legit pain in the ass, and then we're grooving. But it was always nice because the nice thing about that weather is it takes you like all of 2 minutes to get warmed up nice and loose, and you're ready to roll.
Do you recall what stretch during your life, during your athletic ventures that you had in whichever various sports? And I know track and field was the sport you ended up pursuing at the highest degree, but where do you look back and think you were in your best shape? Because that's one thing that tends to occur to me this time of year is you think about July and August, especially here in the Midwest or if you're in the Southeast. And, you know, I do a lot of radio call-ins with shows down there. We used to live down there for a long time, my wife and I. And just the thickness of the humidity at different points late in the summer, it's hard to imagine how the human body holds up to the type of toil that you put it through during certain parts of the year when just the physical exhaustion is at its peak, where you barely take off. Like if you're doing 100-meter sprints or 110 hurdles, if you're playing football, whatever it might be, pretty much as soon as you take off, or in football, as soon as you get a couple of plays in, the exhaustion is already enveloping you at that point. And then it's just about how much can I sustain this before I drop. And at a certain point, you get in enough shape and your condition increases to a level where you can sustain a level of exhaustion. But it's not like you don't get tired. You just learn how to sustain a level of exhaustion. So when you think back to your athletic ventures, when was maybe the point where you were at your peak physical condition? When were you in your best shape?
I would have said, like, in high school, it would have been like, oh, yeah, in football, I was always in the best shape. Like, it was always because I'd be coming off of a track season that you're running, you spend enough summer lifting, and you'd hit the start of football season before you had any wear and tear, you'd be like, think that you're in the best shape. So I would think that for high school, that was like right before, right after you had a whole summer lifting program done, going into football season, senior year. But then I got to college, and I thought I was in shape doing all of that in high school, and did fall track in college, which wasn't as much supervised practices. It was more on your own. And you think, you're like, all right, hey, this is what I'm used to. I'm set to go. I'm set to show up here for indoor season that starts in January. We're ready to fly. And I think I realized about 6 minutes in, I'm like, I thought I was in good shape. This is not good.
It was more of a flightless bird thing happening. We're just caught, and you just weren't
like,
quite
you
taking
thought
off like
you were
you
ready,
to.
And yeah. It took pretty much the entire indoor season for me to catch up to the older guys on the team, the more veteran guys on the team, because they'd been through that all before. And you're like, holy Jesus, this is brutal. So I would say probably towards the start, the middle of indoor track season, my sophomore year of college, because that I was prepared a heck of a lot better going in that year. And it was, it sounds ridiculous to say, but it was, I mean, light years ahead of anything high school wise.
It's crazy what the football calendar ends up doing to your body because, you know, especially at whether it's at the collegiate level, the NFL level, or even high school football, where you're going through most of the high school programs, it's at least the decent-sized programs, will go through all these high school, the summer workouts, the summer trainings, and you'll be over there and you're lifting weights and you're doing workouts and you're maybe even going through specific team drills and team camps. And same thing, of course, happens at the college level and in the National Football League with mini camps and OTAs. So there's a point where you're trying to reach a level of peak physical conditioning in football just for that pre-pad, that pre-practice, that pre-full tilt sort of mode that you're in. And then it comes to getting in, you know, what most folks know as football shape, because you can only condition your body in a certain way during this part of the year, during this where it's mainly just cardiovascular and explosive work that you're doing, until you actually go out there and really start to beat yourself up. Then that's where the football shape comes into, where you actually start to build a bit of a callus that has to kind of surround your whole being with the physical part of it, the mental part of it, where your body and your mind are prepared for the type of pounding that you'll actually go through during a football season. So you can be in the best shape of your life during this part of the year, but then once you actually put the pads on, and once you actually start pounding and scrimmaging and playing in preseason games, then you do realize there's another level of physical conditioning that you actually have to get into just to survive a day of football practice, let alone actually getting through a full week. And I'm sure other sports, you know, have a similar mode of that, where you're not actually completely in game shape or practice shape until you're really going through it.
Yeah, no doubt about that. So how is it comparatively college football-wise getting ready for Big Ten season versus getting ready for an NFC North, NFC Central? Like, what is that? When you go to camp, I don't know, where did Iowa ever go away for camp? Did they do like a I know like Northwestern goes to Kenosha, or at least they used to go to Kenosha for a few days. Illinois goes to Rantoul, I think. Other schools go other places. Did Iowa do that at all?
Yeah, it's not hard to go find a remote location in the state of Iowa. Pretty much once you
leave
Iowa City or
go to the
Ferris
family bar like down the street somewhere.
It's not hard. We would just go stay at a hotel for whatever it would be, like 2 weeks, just to kind of sequester the players. But we would continue to use our same facilities there in Iowa City. You know, there on campus, it would just be you're not staying in the dorms yet. You're coming here. You're moving in. You're staying in this hotel just to really envelop yourself in football. But we're still going to use the same facilities there in Iowa City on the campus. And, you know, I had 2 years with Hayden Fry and 2 years with Kirk Ferentz. There were slight adjustments that each guy had their own little separate approach to what the preseason training camp process was like. But there was a slight sequester in Iowa City when I was in college. Then in the NFL with the various teams I played with in Detroit and Green Bay and Atlanta and Pittsburgh and going through various preseason and regular season machinations with those clubs. Everybody kind of had their own separate approach in Detroit. We ended up, my rookie year in Detroit in 2001, we went up to Saginaw Valley State. We went to that campus up there. I'm pretty sure the Lions still go. Oh, no, they don't, because actually once we transitioned to Ford Field, it was the last year the Silver Dome was my rookie year in Detroit, where we go up to Saginaw Valley State. Then actually in year two, where we moved to Ford Field in the city of Detroit, then we actually just used Ford Field. Same kind of thing as in college, though, where they'd sequester us in a hotel for a few weeks, and then we just get to start sleeping in our own beds, going home at night. So the Saginaw Valley State thing, that ended actually in 2001 in the last year of the Silver Dome. Pittsburgh still goes to a college campus. Green Bay sequesters, and the players ride the bikes around with the fans and those types of things. So most of the teams will still try to have something that separates the players from the comfort of their own home, of their own bed. You know, the term sequester, some teams will use it. I'm using it because it's that same type of mentality like you would want a jury pool to be in, where you don't want them having contact with the outside world. You don't want them communicating with civilians who have nothing to do with your football world, because you do want your world enveloped in football, or at least the coaches, the administrators, the front office. They want the world of the players enveloped in football, so you can consume all this information to the highest degree that you can to get your mind right, to get your body right, to get through the preseason and really have that level of focus that you have to try and make the squad in some players' cases, and then to perhaps achieve some Pro Bowl level of performance or become a star. But to do that, the sequester portion of camp is what really ends up having kind of ripple effects throughout the rest of the season, because if you haven't maximized that time, then you're kind of behind the eight ball once you actually get into game play in the regular season.
So what year was it age-wise for you that you would say tip-top shape? Maybe it was pre-injury, getting the body beat up a little bit. What year was it for you?
There's different levels of it. After you have the amount of surgeries that I had, the best physical condition I was ever in after a bunch of surgeries was my last year in Atlanta with the Falcons. I'd had one of my knees operated on already. I'd had a back surgery. I had my shoulder had been jacked up already. So my wife had pushed me around in wheelchairs a number of different times at that point. I'd broken bones here and there, played in casts and Q-tips on my hands and everything. But the
Q-tip was on your hand?
Q-tip was on my hand. It surrounded my entire left fist during one preseason. That was actually my last year in Detroit. So it was it made it difficult as a defensive lineman trying to grapple on the line of scrimmage, where one fingertip is basically just like a mitten, like a toddler would wear, and then the other was actually my hand that I was able to grab and hold and try to separate from blockers. Still played all right, but it was difficult with the Q-tip. You'll see players occasionally doing that.
I was thinking more the wrapper than the actual hospital use.
He's not a real big guy. Is Q-tip?
No, he could fit in your hand, probably. That's why I think of that. Q-tip just showed up and sat in your hand.
I wish I would have thought of that at the time. Maybe Q-tip could have helped me out.
That's what could have happened.
But that last year in Atlanta, that was probably the best post-surgical, just the long line of surgeries I'd had in 05 with the Falcons, where the off-season regimen in Atlanta, they did a good job with that when Jim Moore was the head coach and Rich McKay was the GM. So that's probably the best post-surgery, just the slew of surgeries I had, the best shape I got back into. Still ended up getting cut at the end of the preseason as well, but that at least got me to a point mentally where I said, you know what, I got my body back to where it needed to be. I played really well. I didn't make this particular squad, so you know what? I'm done bouncing around the NFL.
That's Anthony Heron. I'm Nick Szczepkowski. Why are we talking about preseason NFL stories? Because the Bears report to training camp 1 week from today, and there's someone that's especially excited about it, and especially excited about his quarterback, one of the veteran Bears, maybe the most veteran Bear in terms of experience with the Bears or tenure with the Bears, has some high praise for his quarterback. We'll share that with you next. It's Nick Szczepkowski, Anthony Heron with you, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. 721 Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score, 670thescore.com. This segment being brought to you by Dell. Dell's Black Friday and July sale, up to 40% off and deals on PCs with Intel Core processors. Plus, get free shipping. Visit Dell.com/business deals or call 877-BUY-DELL. Mike Chen on the other side of the glass tonight. It's Nick Szczepkowski, Anthony Heron. Mike Chen trying to suck up to me early on tonight, playing the killers, because him and Eli Herskovich, they do that whenever I'm on the air. They come out of the first break every time, trying to set the mood for the night and put me in a good mood by playing a killers instrumental. So that's what they did there. I told you, though, before the break there, Mr. Anthony Heron, that there's a certain Bear that is especially excited about the quarterback position for the Bears headed into 2018. And it's none other than the longest-tenured Chicago Bear, Kyle Long. Today he tells the Sun-Times, Chicago Sun-Times, he's going to be able to do some things creatively and get to showcase his skills. Says, my little boy is becoming a man. Mitch Trubisky, they've taken off the training wheels, and of Mitch's little bike is how he describes how the Bears' offense will look. Then he's asked about Mitch as a leader and some of the other parts that come into being a quarterback in the league. He says he's a tremendous leader, and some of the guys look up to him in the locker room, and he's probably one of the coolest guys on the team, to be honest. Not just because he's the quarterback, he's a really cool kid, and the Bears are lucky to have him. So high praise there from Kyle Long. I think it'd be more newsworthy if Kyle Long didn't say something like that. If he were to come out and say, you know, I don't think he's a leader. You know, I don't think they're going to take the training wheels off because I think the guy sucks and so do they. So it's not really, I think, all that newsworthy, but Kyle Long is that excited. What's a fair expectation for Mitch Trubisky in year two after a year in an offense that's going to look nothing like it should look in 2018?
Well, the expectations are set partially by what we've seen from Matt Nagy and his previous stops in the NFL as a as an offensive assistant, as a sometimes play caller at previous stops. So for him, we do have a sense for what his offense can look like when the right tools are put in explosive positions to make big plays. He's got an athletic quarterback with a live arm. So there are pieces here between what was already in place from last season, assuming some health of certain guys on the offensive line, and also what's been added for the skill position players, and I'll even include the tight end position with skill position talent that's been added for the Bears. With those things being said, the expectations are also set by the way that they've been talking about the offense, by the way that it's been described by Matt Nagy and Mark Helfrich and Mitch Trubisky, as that they want to take chances. They want to make explosive plays. They want to be on the attack against the opposing defense. And so those are things that sound good in theory, especially when you execute them at a high level. And it lets you think that regardless of execution, the Bears offense will most certainly be more fun to watch this year. I think the scenario that's most likely is that a lot more big plays get made, a lot more mistakes get made as well. And you heard Kyle Long, you just referenced him quoting that they've taken the training wheels off of Trubisky. I wasn't one who had as big a problem with the training wheels being on Mitchell Trubisky during the point of the season where he became the starting quarterback. And during the last month of the year, they started
Well, you were hesitant as well.
Yeah.
In a city that was all excited to, and I was one of them because I've watched enough Buccaneers games to know that Mike Glennon couldn't play dead. Mm-hmm. Like, that guy was no damn good at football, and I didn't care what Ryan Pace said about, oh, well, he beat us when I was still in New Orleans, and he has potential to be great. No, I didn't buy that for a second, so went in with that in my mind.
Is that where you really took a negative turn for Ryan Pace? Is that when he lied to you about Mike Glennon, or was it before that?
No. Like, I've taken it because it's like he's built up all this equity.
Yeah.
Oh, Ryan Pace, he's got this plan, and everything's looking great. It's all in place. And it's like, okay, well, it better start to... That's why I have expectations for this year, is because you're coming off of a year where he was 0-6 in the division.
Yep.
Ryan Pace is 3 years into this thing, and he's getting treated this year like it's year one of his whole phase.
Yes.
He's gone three seasons, he's won three division games in three entire years. So it's like that just gets forgotten about because he drafted a rookie quarterback last year. He brought in a new head coach this year. So it's like everything resets with him. It's like, well, wait, he had a roster that's won 3 division games in their last 18 tries. Like, that's not acceptable. And does that count for anything, or is it just kicking the can down the road?
And that's the thing that I think we need to continue reminding folks about during the season, during this preseason process, and then as we evaluate what's taking place during the regular season. Because it's one thing for us to evaluate Matt Nagy based off this being his first year in Chicago and these not all being his guys in his system. These are all Ryan Pace's guys, though. So for him, and I'm glad you bring that up, and it's something I think you and I have even discussed before.
Probably where, the day John Fox was fired. And we had all the callers of, well, that's not Ryan Pace's fault. Nope, you got to give him a pass on that. Like, well, that's quite a bad line on a resume.
He's
but
had
okay.
some time to try to get this right. And so for this season, does it mean the Bears should be a 10 or 11 win team? No, I don't know that expectations should be that high for the entire team. But to show marked improvement, to me, is an expectation that goes at the front door of Ryan Pace, because this is something he's been building for a long time. And he had an opportunity to hire a second head coach, or, you know, in some cases, you know, a lot of folks would assume, okay, he's hiring his first head coach, and that's fine. But the roster is in place, and it's his roster. So for Ryan Pace, his evaluation needs to be based off his entire time in Chicago, not just this year. And so while Matt Nagy, he's likely to survive for several seasons, you know, especially assuming that things do look better, at least, you know, through the first couple of years and what we've seen the last couple of years with John Fox. But that doesn't mean Matt Nagy gets the same type of leash that Ryan Pace, or that doesn't mean Ryan Pace gets the same leash that Matt Nagy will get and should get and taken over as the head coach for the Bears. To your question about the expectations for the offense, though, they've talked about being explosive. They've talked about attacking. They've talked about being aggressive. So with that in mind, you expect more mistakes to get made. And that's okay, as long as you're seeing a level of execution from what they're doing on that side of the ball. One, a system that makes sense. Two, a quarterback in his second year in the National Football League who's had an entire offseason to try and consume this playbook. And it sounds like, and everyone's saying the right things about the level of work he's been putting in. And I told you before, I was up at House Hall, whatever it was now, you know, just shortly before the draft at this point in about mid-April. Everyone I spoke to over there said all the right things about what Trubisky is doing and what he's trying to put in place and how he's becoming a leader. And from the little bit I got to see of him interacting with his teammates and guys strolling through the halls and talking to them a bit, everyone seemed very positive and everyone seemed very encouraged specifically about him. There's excitement in the building about him, not just him coming in as the draft pick and being this talented kid, because there were things we saw last preseason and even the first couple of starts where it's like, yeah, he's got a strong arm and yeah, he's pretty quick. Those are things you can evaluate in an NFL combine. But now that folks have been around Trubisky for a year, they're genuinely excited about not just the physical tools, but his mental makeup. And that to me was the unanswered question about his draft evaluation, because he only started 13 games at North Carolina. So I believe that if he goes out there and shows a level of confidence, and there were times where I was on with you guys in the afternoons last year and evaluating what he was doing in some of the games and just looking at particular plays and particular moments of growth that took place on the field, of seeing when they faced this same coverage 2 weeks ago, he just held the ball and ran it for like a 6-yard gain, whereas now he was trying to throw that hole shot, or now he's going for the touchdown and making the proper read, at a level of growth in his aggression, in his ability to read defenses, in the quickness of that information going from his mind and coming out his right arm. To see that early and off during the season, it may lead to mistakes, which I'm okay with, but I want to see Mitchell Trubisky being confident about what he's looking at and being assertive with his willingness to try and attack the defense, because it's one thing to say you're going to attack, it's another thing with conviction to actually attack. So that's what it needs to be about, not just because that's what we've seen from Nagy's system before, but because Nagy and Trubisky continually tell us they are going to be in attack mode.
That's Anthony Herron. I'm Nick Szczepkowski. 312-644-6767. This segment being brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. They're making big plans for their 25th anniversary. Get your season tickets now and receive exclusive benefits. Visit ChicagoWolves.com or call 1-800-THE-WOLVES. There's a ton to digest there from Mitch Trubisky. And 312-644-6767 if you'd like to participate in that conversation. That's why at some points last year when... It goes back to the Kyle Long comment about the training wheels being off going into this season. When you were playing down the stretch last year, I would have liked to have seen that a bit more. And I, yeah, you're right. I'm the same guy that I hate the tanking at the NFL level because if you're not even tanking necessarily, but when fans call and, oh my God, I want the team to lose because it's a higher draft pick this and get rewarded that. And it's like, yeah, but the culture of everything that goes into it. So I kind of have that in your mind as I do say this. Mm. I contradict myself a little bit in thinking this way, but it's like I would have liked to see Trubisky used that more last year, and I understand it. When you have an entirely different coaching staff, at least on the offensive side of the ball, they're going to be running things completely different. John Fox, who's the ultra-mega-conservative offensive mind, or at least in his philosophies, he's not going to – like the Carolina game, when Trubisky throws like six or seven passes that entire game, the Bears win, so seven you can't passes. Really complain.
Yeah.
But it's like, what did that really do to help the most important player – on your roster for hopefully the next decade plus to come.
Well, and that was the juxtaposition last year because John Fox knew he needed to win games to keep a job, and he had assistant coaches who knew they needed to win games to keep a job. So you're trying to juxtapose, or just the Bears in general, last season, 2017, was about that juxtaposition between John Fox needing to win to keep his job versus having this young quarterback who wasn't ready to play well, especially by the time he went in the lineup, but Glennon was just so bad that you could only sit there and watch him do that for so long before it just makes more sense to throw the kid in there, one, for his development, and two, because there's maybe some more interesting things we can do schematically with him in the lineup versus having Lurch or Uncle Fester or, you know, the Jolly Green Giant, whatever, you know, sort of mythical monster you would want to equate to Mike Glennon being in the pocket. So making that move, then you're saying, we still want to win games. We're just doing it with a kid who's not ready to do it. I mean, I'll go back to preseason game number three, and I'll continue to remind folks of this. That was Mitchell Trubisky's audition last year. That was him out there with the starting offense against, I believe it was the Tennessee Titans.
Yeah.
And it was a lot of their starters on defense route. It was guys who were going to play. It was NFL caliber players, but a lot of it was their number twos. There were multiple times just within the first drive where he couldn't even get the ball snapped on time, where he couldn't get the words out of his mouth exiting the huddle. Those are the things that, beyond him being fast, beyond him having a live arm, those are the things that equate to success from one snap to the next. Can you actually direct the offense? And he could not. So the fact that he couldn't direct the offense, it doesn't matter how big an arm he has, and him throwing it downtown to Scrapper Gentry against the number fours, I think later in that same game, that looks cool and it's a highlight. That wasn't going to equate to victories in an NFL regular season game. So he wasn't ready. So John Fox had a quarterback who wasn't ready to do anything that would resemble playing winning football. So his best opportunity to try and win was for him to throw seven passes against Carolina, against the Panthers that equaled victory. Now you look at the last four games he played. He attempted, I'm just pulling it up right now, in December. So there was the game against San Francisco coming off of an embarrassing performance against Philadelphia. So I thought the first game in December against the 49ers was a bit of an indictment on the Bears, because the following week, even though it was a close game and it was 15-14, but the level of ball that Trubisky had played up to that point and how bad they were the previous game against Philadelphia, that to me said, if you're going to come out against San Francisco, you need to be aggressive. You need to put the ball up. Everybody needs to be on board with coming out with this win in an aggressive manner. They weren't aggressive. They lost a close game where your old kicker just comes out and,
well,
you know, sticks
they lost
thumb
a game that they got
what.
A kick return for a touchdown or a punt return for a touchdown from Tariq Cohen, and they didn't allow a touchdown defensively, and they still found a way to lose. Mm-hmm. Like, how many times does that happen? I remember thinking it at the time, and it sounds very hyperbolic now because mm-hmm. Jimmy Garoppolo ended up, I believe the 49ers won that game and ended up winning out the rest of the regular season. Mm-hmm. But at the time, they had lost to what was, I think, a one-win team with a quarterback who had not played a down for them going into that game, a home game against them. They had gotten a special team score. They had not allowed a touchdown in this game. And I was thinking in my head, I'm like, with all of this in the equation, has there ever been a worse loss in Bears or NFL history? Like, this is truly awful.
It was bad.
And then you saw the 49ers use it as almost a momentum swing of towards the end of the year. They're playing some pretty damn good football, beat some decent teams by the end of the season. And you just thought, at least myself, I was like, God, feel a lot better going into 2018 if you're a Niners fan and you have that than a Bears fan and you have this you're kind of going with. But when you do make the coaching change and you make such a splash in free agency, there's nowhere to go but for the expectations to be up. Maybe not anywhere near playoff level, but at least up entering 2018. 312-644-6767. Telephone number to call. Talking a little bit of Mitch Trubisky and Chicago Bears here. You mentioned the inability to break a huddle, get out of a huddle in time, get snaps off in time.
Snap it, Mitchell! Snap. I mean, they're yelling at him from the sideline. Snap it, Mitchell! He just didn't know what was going on the field yet, and it's right. Understandable.
He shouldn't.
Other folks need to understand that too, and that's why he wasn't in the lineup early in the year, but please continue.
But I did always think of this as the year went on. One of the things I took away wasn't always just like trying to evaluate every throw. Trust me, I'm not a quarterback evaluator. I can't watch every down and break it down like the old, Ron Jaworski used to an NFL all right. matchup all the time, yeah. Right? I am not, just because my last name ends in a ski, I can't pull that off for you. But I
bought it, though, if you acted like Jaws.
That's right. Break down this tape. And, yeah, I used to love that show.
Talk about all the film you watch.
That's right. Yeah. Exactly. I loved Jaws back in the day. But Ryan Wood was a writer for one of the papers up in Green Bay, Green Bay Press Gazette. And the week going into the second Packers game this past season, early November, he had Josh Sitton was on one of the conference calls. And Josh Sitton was asked about dealing with Mitch Trubisky and working with Mitch Trubisky, a rookie quarterback trying to find his way in the league, and how has he progressed? And Sitton mentioned in that conference call, we started to break the huddle early, he was saying in regards to the game the week before. We started to break the huddle early, and Trubisky yelled at us, get the F back in the huddle. Don't break it until I break it. Cussed us out, all of us linemen. And I was like, hell yeah, I respect the bleep out of that guy. Mm-hmm. And so that's at least one that I kind of look at. And it's not always the development of watching highlights and whatnot. When people complain about Jay Cutler, when people complain about what you don't see in a quarterback and they throw the intangibles and the leadership stuff out there, like, that's one of them that I always keep in the back of my mind of like, all right, well, there's promise in that department, at least, if Josh Sitton, not always seemingly the easiest of veterans to get along with, has that kind of respect for you, is going out and saying that about you halfway through your rookie year, a year that you weren't supposed to pretty much play at all, let alone as much as he did, probably at least a good step.
It's a very positive step, and when you look at how that equates to what's going to happen this season. So the whole snap at Mitchell from preseason number 3 to what's maybe 2 months later at that point, mm-hmm. him cursing out his teammates and saying, get back in the huddle. And there are certain types of leadership, and there's moments and ways you can go about something like that. You mentioned the name Jay Cutler. You even wrote about Jay Cutler.
That's right.
For 670score.com.
Big news
week, right?
For you on that, by the way.
Okay.
I was told by Cody.
Are we gonna tease it for later? Okay, it's good for now.
I can give it to you now, and maybe we can get a little Cutler conversation later. I was told by Cody Westerlund, I don't know if you've had to deal with him at all, our main web guy, runs the website, 670score.com, editor. He takes all my misspellings and bad sentences and makes them look like coherent English. He broke the news to me yesterday. That was the most viewed story on 670thescore.com this week.
Really?
He asked me, can you please write next Monday on the Kristen Cavallari show? And I'm like, you know what? For you, Cody, for that kind of response, yeah. I will do anything. All so right. Now on Sunday night, I have that. I mean, that's... DVR is already set, breaking that down like breaking down a Bears game. I'll be at 670score.com come Monday morning. But proceed with your Mitch Trubisky thoughts.
Hey, and folks are into it, man. And I haven't watched it myself yet. I probably will at some point. Just some of the folks in the town have fun with it and they're interested in it. But yeah, we can discuss that a little bit more later. But you mentioned Jay Cutler, and there's a story, and you know, I'm assuming Olin Krutz will be a part of things again in some fashion this year. And there's a story I won't tell that I think someone should see if Olin is comfortable telling, a story that's been communicated to me in a certain way about Jay's early time with the Bears and a run-in that he had with a teammate on the practice field for a mistake that was made. And the comparison I'll make is there's times as a leader where you do want to, you know, chide your teammates. You do want to maybe call out a guy or even call out a group for a certain type of mistake. And a lot of this, and folks who are in leadership positions go through these things where you're trying to determine what's the best way for me to motivate that individual. And there was a moment during Jay's early time, during, you know, his first preseason in Chicago, where he called a guy out, a veteran guy who was not used to being called out, and especially for this particular type of situation that the guy got called out for, and Jay was set straight in a private moment later on. I guess I'll leave that particular story at that and see if it's a story.
That's a hell of a tease. And it's not one that's going to get teed off. Yeah, it's not going to be one that gets paid off before 10 o'clock tonight.
No,
but maybe somewhere in the next decade or so.
It's a good story. I can't wait for the next commercial break. It's worth somebody maybe tweeting Olin or especially during the season to see if he's comfortable telling it, because it's not my story to tell, but it's a story that's been told to me by multiple
just
people.
Just please make it known to Olin that I'm not the one saying that he has a story to tell, because Olin, I would not like Olin to show up and palm my head and throw it out the ninth story of this building.
But a moment like that is different than Trubisky when you're breaking the huddle and everyone in this systematic moment of unity and precision, not doing it exactly correct, to call everybody out as a group and say, we are going to do this in unison. That is something that folks can rally around when you're calling out the group for this moment of precision not taking place versus what, you know, this one particular example that I'm sort of referencing and other Jay Cutler stories that are there, that have been there privately, that are there publicly, you know, whether it's, hey, my tackle's getting his butt kicked in this game and I'm going to push him in front of everybody, whatever the case may be. There are moments that Jay Cutler as a leader did not come across in the way that you want your leaders to come across.
That's Anthony Herron. I'm Nick Szczepkowski. The second half and bottom of this hour being brought to you by Lakeside Bank. Banking is pretty much one size must fit all. If you don't fit, you don't matter. At Lakeside Bank, people do matter, so they customize tailoring their products and services to fit just you. Join Lakeside Bank. It's about time. 312-644-6767. If you want to get in on the Bears conversation, the Mitchell Trubisky conversation, be doing that up until 8 o'clock. That's when Fran Charles from MLB Network will join us. Lots to discuss with Anthony Rizzo. Lots to discuss with the Cubs, who sit a game and a half behind the Milwaukee Brewers right now. And hey, everybody, this Saturday is the USO Barbecue for the Troops, and Lawrence Holmes will be at Ed Napleton Honda in Oak Lawn from 1 to 3. Come join Lawrence at 5800 West 95th, and let's support our troops at home and deployed together. 312-644-6767. Nick Szczepkowski, Anthony Herron with you. Tons still to get to before some baseball talk at 8 o'clock on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. 747 Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score, 670thescore.com. Nick Szczepkowski, Anthony Herron with you this evening. Starting off with a little bit of football conversation, just a week away from the Bears reporting to training camp. And then we'll start to break down every little thing. Oh my God, Mitch Trubisky's fallen in love with this wide receiver that you've never heard of before today, because they're in 7-on-7 and he's found a favorite receiver that he's targeting for the day. And we'll get all those tweets and all of that and everything that is Bourbonnais training camp coverage, but we can't get enough of it. And I feel a lot more interested, a lot more excited for the Bears this year. I still have next to no expectation. Okay. I want to make that clear. Like, I don't have them. I think Minnesota is going to be the class of the NFC. Them in Philadelphia. There's in Los Angeles, really. Rams look loaded too. But I think Minnesota is going to be right in that conversation, be the class of the NFC again.
I feel a butt coming.
What's that?
I feel a butt coming, but yeah, continue.
Not necessarily like a butt there, okay. with the Vikings. Packers get Aaron Rodgers back. I don't love the rest of their roster, but they still have the best player in the game, so that's going to be a problem. Detroit, a lot of people are low on the Lions. Oh, they didn't make big splashes free agent-wise. Well, they hired a new coach. Maybe they can figure out that defense, figure out a running game for a change, so I'm not sold that they're just going to fall off either. So I'm not that excited about where the Bears' record's going to be this year, but in terms of curiosity versus what it was a year ago, where you knew it was a coach that was playing on his last legs and pretty much playing out the round, you knew that there was going to be some big-time overhaul because you had no expectation and really no hope. There's at least hope with this. And it's not necessarily hope for 2018, but beyond that it's the building of something a lot bigger than what we've seen really the last 7-8 years with the Bears. And I'm excited to watch that step this season, because I still don't have expectations to be even 500, but I think that there's going to be some fun to be had here, and it's going to be one of those offenses that I have a feeling, just based off of how football tends to go, like early on, this thing's going to look like a disaster, and you're going to get all the hot takes of Matt Nagy doesn't have a clue, Mitch Trubisky's a bust, he can't figure out his new offense, Allen Robinson sucks because he's coming off of an ACL injury, and he's probably not fully healthy by the time opening night's around, and you're going to get all these takes early on. This is a team that I think, because of all of this new system, fitting everything into there, Like, by the time midseason comes around, they might not be playing for playoff contention, but they should be pretty damn fun to watch, at least offensively. So at least that's my expectation as we're a week away from training camp. I don't know if that's fair. I don't know if that's unjust in thinking it that way. But that's kind of like where my 2018 vision for the Bears, at least offensively, kind of lays out here at 7:50 p.m. on July 12th, 2018, a week before the Bourbonnais dorms and everything else are busted down by Bears.
And that's sort of the life, the world of football voyeurs, because especially because of the way the schedule works out, where it's just one game a week. So, you know, it's one thing where we overreact, like during the baseball season, from one game to the next, and there's 162 of them. It's only 16 football games, and so there's a week in between where you can parse every little moment in the game and every situation that happened, and quarter by quarter go through and drive by drive. So there's time between the football games where we are definitely going to overreact to every game that happens and make it some referendum on what Matt Nagy's future is going to be as a head coach and whether or not Mitchell Trubisky is or will be a bust. So early in the season, especially when you look at how the schedule shapes out, you know, the first 2 weeks, and, you know, who knows what exactly Green Bay is, who knows exactly what Seattle is. But let's say, for instance, you go to Green Bay and the offense actually plays really well against a defense that we shouldn't have any real high expectations of. And maybe they, you know, just lose in a shootout against the Packers. Who knows? By some miracle, even beat the Packers in Green Bay. You know, if you win a game in Lambeau, then the expectations in this city will be ablaze with the thought of Mitchell Trubisky making Pro Bowls and becoming a Hall of Famer. But the other 15 games are going to matter as well, and teams are going to have film. But that's just how folks in the football world tend to react to these things, because you have a week in between to look at and to try to parse everything that's going to go on. Overall, I do think, see, my expectations, and back to the point we were making a moment ago, my expectations early in the season won't necessarily even come down to, and this is part of just, you know, just for me as a football guy and the way I watch the game, won't be as much about the yards that are out there, the points that are going up, but are we actually seeing attempts being made at what they're promising us? Because my expectations for what this offense is going to be, you know, initially it was about, and, you know, we talked about it on the airwaves a lot, were about what I saw in the past. But now we do have a lot of, you know, verbal promises being made from Nagy, from Trubisky, from Helfrich about what this offense is going to be as well. So if they're telling us they're going to attack, if they're telling us they're going to be aggressive, if they're telling us we're going to see a lot of different formations and personnel groups and putting guys in these cool positions, that's what I expect to see. But they haven't throttled back any expectations about what it will be. So at least to see, even if the tangible results aren't always successful, to see them making those types of attempts early in the season, that's what I at least want to see, just schematically. Are we seeing the Bears attempting to do things that will take them in the proper direction? Because there will be some fits and starts early on, but you don't want those fits and starts to come just from not being able to get lined up. You want them to see, you want them to come from, we can get lined up. There's just the precision isn't quite there yet. We just narrowly missed on this deep ball, or up, there was this one key, you know, situation where protection got blown and there was a big play that was open down the field. He would have thrown it. He would have probably been accurate. But, and then you want to see that type of growth happening. I don't want to see the Bears coming out looking conservative or looking confused. That's not what you want to see early in the season. You want to see a team from jump that looks like they can attack. You're just missing maybe a little bit of mustard off that hot dog that's likely to come later in the year.
Well, yeah, that's where it comes in for me. It's just like, it's hard to think of, right, your biggest free agent acquisition, Allen Robinson. He's coming off of an ACL injury. What do we know about those now that, okay, you might be cleared to play 9 months to 12 months, but when are you actually back to being 100% and back to being yourself?
Exactly.
Not usually in that 12-month window, usually in the 6 months that follows that. So it might even be, it's not 2018.
Everybody's not Adrian Peterson.
Sure, yeah, right. Not freak of freaks, and you go and you almost break the all-time rushing record or single-season rushing record not even a year after tearing up your ACL. But I think there's going to be noticeable growing pains with this. A quarterback in a new system, only his second year in the league, based off of a year that I don't take a whole heck of a lot from last year whatsoever. You still have an offensive line that I think is questionable at best, based off of injury pasts and what you know about who is there right now. Cody Whitehair took a big step back last year. Can he take a step forward again this year? You have two tackles that I don't think too many people trust with any extreme confidence either. So I think there are a lot of question marks on that offense. I also think that there's enough there potential-wise to say that, all right, once you give it a little bit of time, this thing could be fun, unlike a Bears offense we've seen in quite a while. Before we take a timeout, West Loop Justin has some thoughts on Mitch Trubisky, and he's up next on the Score. What's up, Justin?
Yeah, hey, guys. Just wanted to weigh in real quick. I love the conversation. Getting excited for the season. Don't have a huge expectations as far as the record, but really am looking forward to seeing the new offense, the new coach, and Mitch kind of develop before our eyes. So really just wanted to maybe see what your thoughts were on this question. It's kind of my own personal conspiracy theory, thinking that, you know, maybe Mike Glennon could have been the world's most expensive smokescreen of all time to get Mitch, and, you know, how the NFL operates these days. Brian Pace had to go out there and kind of be secret to get the guy he really wanted. I guess we'll see what happens, but I don't know if you agree with that, if that's a wild conspiracy, or if maybe that's exactly what happened so that Ryan Pace could get his guy.
Is Justin saying, like, to sign Mike Glennon before the draft was the smokescreen, or to start him after Trubisky was the smokescreen?
I guess both. You know, to me, on the outside looking in as a fan, that was a pretty weak plan. And, you know, I didn't have a whole lot of faith in Glennon. And to see, you know, I didn't think – I was like, you know, maybe the Bears could actually pick, you know, a playmaker or a quarterback in this draft because, I mean, our biggest star at the time was, like, Kyle Long. When a right guard, you know, the superstar of the team, something's going wrong. And I felt like Pace was up to something, and I just – you know, it caught me by surprise. It caught a lot of people by surprise. So I was just curious about, you know, your thoughts on that situation.
Yeah, Justin, appreciate the telephone call. I think it took everyone by surprise. Anyone that watched the Buccaneers under Mike Glennon, they were drafted number one and got Jameis Winston for a reason because the guy stunk. Like, that's why, because Mike Glennon wasn't the answer there. So it was a surprise they signed him, and it was also a surprise after signing a quarterback to a big deal that they go and they get Trubisky. So, yeah, I think it's a surprise. I don't think it's a smokescreen necessarily. So you're going to give away $20 million or whatever the heck it was for Glennon and move up in the draft? Like, if anything, if it's a smokescreen, I think your thought is, or your plan is, we can sit at three because no one thinks we're going to move up or have to do this in order to get Trubisky, and we're a sleeping giant here to get a quarterback. I don't buy into conspiracy theory. I just think of bad management and a bad signing.
Yeah, I think it really came down to the Mike Glennon situation was we want a veteran signal caller, and we know exactly what the guys who were here before, who were on the roster during the 2016 season, we know exactly who they are. You know, we know who Matt Barkley is. We certainly know who Jay Cutler is. There was no qualms about moving on from everybody who had been at the quarterback position for the Bears during 2016. So let's bring in some new blood. Let's bring in a guy who's been in the league for a few years, who has made some plays in the NFL, have a veteran, but still go in there into the draft with the plan of bringing in a guy who has a shot at being the quarterback of the future. Now, apparently, they had their eyes on Mitchell Trubisky the entire time. And so I don't necessarily view Glennon as a smokescreen, more of an insurance policy. You know, that's
well, that's a bad insurance policy. That's you're paying too much of a premium. Yeah. It's sign me away from that. Like, that seems like the insurance salesman that comes in and gives you a complete BS program that you get signed up for, if that's the case.
You don't want to have to use insurance. That's what it comes down
to.
You want to pay the premium and never actually have to use your insurance policy. We all want to live forever. We don't usually get to do that.
That's Anthony Herron. I'm Nick Szepkowski. We have to pause for a timeout. Plenty of baseball happenings in this town. A superstar, one of the most consistent players in the game, is struggling and struggling mightily. We'll try to get to the bottom of that with Fran Charles from MLB Network next on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.